I'm Jordan Abel, Director of Public Programs at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, and I welcome you to BINA, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the JCCSF. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who've come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of BINA, we feature the Common Sense Census, Media Use by Children Ages 0 to 8, presented by Common Sense Media's Michael Robb and Jill Murphy. Common Sense Media examines the pattern of media use among young American children and offers recommendations and tips for parents based on their findings. Covering television, video, reading, music, computers, video games, and mobile digital devices, it looks at which platforms they are using, the activities or content they are engaging on those platforms, and how their media use patterns vary by age, gender, or socioeconomic status. And now, join Common Sense Media's Dana Blum on stage at the JCCSF as she introduces our program.
So first, let me just ask, how many of you have heard of Common Sense or use Common Sense? Most of the people. Wonderful. And I want to tell you just a little bit about Common Sense and who we are and why we do this research. So we are a nonprofit, and think of Common Sense as kind of an umbrella organization. And underneath that, we have three pillars. And one of them is Common Sense Media, which is probably what you're most familiar with. And we do rate around almost like 40,000 different pieces of media. And we rate it for educational value. We rate it for age. And we just are going to be beginning to rate for gender equity. And that will be a new rating. So you can look at that the same way you can look at all the other ratings. And then we give a lot of parent advice on that platform as well. And then we have Common Sense Education. And so we are the leading curriculum in schools across the country. We're in over half of the schools with the digital literacy and citizenship curriculum. So we are kind of the granddaddy of that. We started it, and now most schools around the country are using a digital literacy and citizenship curriculum, starting in kindergarten, going to 12th grade. And then the third platform that we have is on policy called Common Sense Kids. We are the largest nonprofit that advocates for kids. So we want to make sure that kids are the nation's top priority, and we're out there fighting for kids every day. Under our research, we also do... under education, we also do research. And that's what you're going to hear about tonight. So this summer, we released our Gender Equity is Common Sense research. You can find all of this information on our website. It's all free. And then tonight, we're going to hear about 0 to 8. And the other piece that we're going to show you is another piece that we have embargoed and we are not releasing to the public. We're going to show you two very short PSAs. These are part of a campaign that we started, and it's called Device Free Dinner. It's a pretty simple concept. Not all parents follow it. So we're hoping that we can make a cultural shift and change that so you will not have devices at your dinner table. And the first PSA I'm going to show you is kind of fun, and so let's watch it, and then we'll see the second one.
So, sweetie, tell me about your day.
Well, today, actually, I was driving to the grocery store, and I saw a dog.
Oh, you saw a dog?
Daddy, put your phone in the basket.
The basket's so crowded, though.
Just put it in.
Oh, wait.
Put it in the basket. In the basket.
Put it in the basket, right?
It's the easy thing. Just put it in the basket.
Please put it in the basket.
Thanks. All right. Let's see what we can get this meal.
As long as it's in the basket, though, I can technically still touch it, right?
I'm sure no one recognizes that in yourselves. No, no, no. Now, the other PSA I'm going to show you, you will not see on any channel. This is our PG-rated PSA. I'm going to show you it, but you will find it on Funny or Die.
Oh, it's so nice to all be sitting down together. Who can tell me something they did today?
I drew a horsey.
Good for you, Sam.
I started smoking.
I love you too, sweetheart.
I'm selling bongs out of our minivan.
I got a tramp stamp.
I'm getting implants.
I'm dating your brother.
I'm cooking meth in the basement.
Great idea, kiddo. That's why you're so popular at school.
Okay, so that is our PSA. keep devices out of your dinner table. So now we're going to get into, I know what you are here to hear about tonight, and that is our 0 to 8 research. I'm going to introduce Michael Robb, who is the head of our research at Common Sense. And so I'm going to have Michael begin and give the presentation.
Thank you, Dana. It is a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me. So, yeah, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the Common Sense Census, media use by kids age 0 to 8. So let me start very briefly by telling you a little bit about the methodology of the study. So what's important to know about this survey is that it's a nationally representative, what we call probability-based sample, which means, unlike most surveys and things that you see reported in the press, this is not just a survey of people who happen to click on a link that they find online. This is a sample that's really representative of all American families. The other thing that's really special about this survey and that really sets it apart from other things is that this is a tracking survey. And in fact, this is the third time that we've conducted this particular survey. We did it before in 2011, again in 2013, and now in 2017. So this allows us to track what's changed over time. And it really is an amazing time to be tracking trends and changes in children's use of media. We're really fortunate that we began when we did. We were really just kind of at the onset of mobile phones and touchscreen devices. So we really feel like we've had like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to look at how these new technologies are being introduced into kids' lives. And so the really big story in this study is the real near universality of mobile media today. So about 6 years ago, about half of kids lived in a home with at least one mobile device. Today, it's almost 100%. So 98% of kids do. And the growth in tablet ownership has also been pretty incredible. 6 years ago, just 8% of families had a tablet in the home. Today, nearly 80% have one. And a lot of kids have their own tablet now. So 6 years ago, fewer than 1% of children had their own tablet. Just 4 years ago, it was 7%. Now 42% of kids have their own tablet. The amount of time that kids spend using these devices has increased enormously as well, going from an average of just 5 minutes a day 6 years ago to 48 minutes a day today. So that's a nearly tenfold increase. The total amount of screen time per day among kids has actually stayed roughly the same. So in 2011, the total amount of screen time was 2 hours and 16 minutes. Now it's about 2 hours and 19 minutes. But the proportion of screen time that is spent specifically on mobile devices has grown a lot. So it was only 4% 6 years ago, and now it's over a third of screen time today at 35%, which is a pretty remarkable shift over a pretty short period of time. The time that is spent with mobile devices varies considerably by age. We saw earlier that on average, 0 to 8-year-olds were spending about 48 minutes a day with mobile media. But the very youngest kids are still not spending a lot of time with mobile devices, by and large. So kids under 2 are spending just 7 minutes a day with mobile media. So this idea that babies everywhere are just kind of swiping and clicking all day long is really just not true. But from ages 2 to 8, their kids are averaging about an hour a day on touchscreens, give or take a couple of minutes. Now, when we talk about mobile media, it's kind of enveloped in this bigger category of things that we call screen time, and that includes lots of things. So it includes time spent watching TV and videos, also spent time spent playing video games, playing mobile games on a phone, e-reading, video chatting, and so on. But I want to take a closer look at one aspect of screen time, which is the largest part of screen time, which is time spent watching TV and videos. And there's been some pretty big shifts in what's happened over the last few years. And the one thing that you can see is that in 2011, there were only a few things that we were actually measuring. There's just been a huge diversification of ways that kids can access and watch TV shows and videos. So before, we were looking at, you know, are kids watching TV? Are they watching DVDs or videos? Are they watching online? And at that point, it was only 4%, so it was a very small portion of kids' total TV and total viewing time. And now, it's far more. There's been a big increase in online viewing. There are far more subscription services that people subscribe to. More families have a subscription service like Netflix or Hulu than have cable or satellite TV now. And, you know, there's a proliferation of the short video form, like what you see on YouTube, which now constitutes about 17% of all kids viewing. Another finding that really stands out for us is the large difference in the amount of time devoted to screen media between kids in different socioeconomic groups. Children from lower-income homes and those with less highly educated parents spend substantially more time with screen media per day than other children do. So kids from lower-income homes spend an average of more than an hour and a half more with screen media per day than kids from higher-income homes. And you can find similar differences based on parent education. And that brings me to the digital divide. So the digital divide is a term they use to describe discrepancies in access to different kinds of technology. And it's a lot smaller than it used to be, but it still exists. So in 2011, there was a 50 percentage point gap between higher and lower income families in having high-speed internet access in the home. Today, it's been more than halved, down to 22%. So much smaller, but still a pretty significant gap. Kids in lower income homes are also less likely to have a tablet at home, but there has been a huge increase from 2% to 61% of low income kids having a tablet in the home. And you know that could be really important for a lot of reasons, including things like access to educational content and other kinds of content. But there is still a 24% percentage point difference between richer kids and poorer kids. The gap in overall mobile ownership has virtually disappeared, so 99% and 96%. And that's due to the number of lower-income families who now have at least primarily one smartphone in the home. Turning to a slightly different topic, if some of you may have heard of the American Academy of Pediatrics, they've made a number of recommendations about children and media over the years, and our study has assessed how we're doing on a few of them. So first, a recommendation about not having TV in the bedroom. The AAP recommends that that you keep TVs out of the bedroom. And in fact, the percent of children with a TV set has declined substantially from 42% in 2011 down to 36% and now down to 29%. That's a pretty good change and a really positive one. I'd like to think that Common Sense Media had something to do with that and the AAP can take some credit, but in general, it is quite positive. Second, the AAP recommends against what's called background television, and that's TV that is just kind of left on whether anybody is watching or not. That's very common in a lot of homes. And that's something that hasn't really budged and, in fact, has increased a bit since we first started measuring in 2011. So back then it was 39%. Now it's up to 42%. So not that much different, but a little bit more. And background TV is not good for a host of reasons, which we'll probably get into in our discussion later. And it's especially not good for the youngest kids. So we definitely need to make more progress there. Screens are part of bedtime for many families. Almost half of families have screen media as kind of part of bedtime that's used in the hour before bed. That is something that the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends against because it can affect sleep, the quantity and quality of sleep. But interestingly, when you look at mobile devices, and some people say, okay, well, TV is down. Are kids just having tablets or smartphones in their rooms? And the answer is not really. So there is a small portion, 16%, who do keep a mobile device in their bedroom every or most nights. So I mentioned earlier that we're really lucky to kind of begin these studies at the beginning of some really interesting technological changes. And today we're at the cutting edge of the introduction of other new technologies that have the potential to have a really profound impact on kids' lives. Things like virtual reality, you know, in which children can be enmeshed in a, you know, really immersive 360-degree gaming or video environment. Things like voice-activated assistants like Amazon Echo or Google Home or even the Siri on your phone, which can be really interesting for a lot of reasons. You know, it can help pre-literate children conduct searches or make phone calls or send texts or request videos, which is something that gets done quite a bit in my home. And internet-connected toys, which is the child's version of the Internet of Things, if you've heard of the Internet of Things. But these are basically toys that can connect to the internet. So in the current study, only a small percentage of children have each of these technologies. But it'll be interesting. The next time we do this one in 2021, we'll get a sense of whether any or all of these new technologies have had the same kind of impact that mobile technologies have had thus far. So now that you've heard a little bit about the state of media for young children, I wanted to bring up Jill Murphy. Jill and I are going to have a little discussion, and we're going to bring in some of our own experiences as parents and as experts in this field. So yeah, thank you.
I'm Jill Murphy. I'm the editor-in-chief at Common Sense Media. Been there for 150 years. I've been with the organization 13 years, and I've already seen this research quite a bit. And every time, still, it shocks me. When I started at Common Sense, I think we were mainly focused on scary movies and violent video games, and I miss the old days because now it's all about, like, when can my baby get a cell phone? And it's a little alarming and how quickly everything has changed. So I feel like I'm among my people. I have two girls. They're 7 and 4, so I'm also right in the thick of this. They have become my personal guinea pigs for all the parenting advice that we suggest. So, and we take all of Mike's great research and we really try and distill it down and make it more digestible for parents and give you real tangible facts and tips that you can use in your home and your everyday life. But now that Mike's here, I get to put him in the hot seat. So, Mike, all this amazing research.
Go ahead.
What do you think that parents can do with this information? What are some basic things that they can do to help manage media in their home?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing to think about is the fact that I'm assuming for most of the parents here, media are already a part of our lives, whether we want it to be or not. And we should be thinking not just about the amount of time that kids are spending with media, but what it is that they're actually using, right? And so in the work that we do at Common Sense, and based on the research, we really talk a lot about choosing the good stuff, like trying to find stuff that we know is developmentally appropriate for young kids. And when I say developmentally appropriate, I mean what's good for a 3-year-old might not necessarily be right for a 6-year-old and vice versa. What's right for a 6-year-old might not necessarily be right for a 3-year-old. So, you know, I always recommend that parents try to find something that's well matched to both where a kid is developmentally in terms of where they are cognitively or emotionally, but also like what are they interested in, you know, and trying to find things that like play to kids' interests and strengths.
Yeah. Yeah. Most of you, I think, are pretty familiar with our ratings and reviews. They are really designed to be training wheels, too, not just for parents, but for kids, too. We are trying to raise a generation of media critics and media literate kids who can make these selections for themselves. So you don't have to continue to be, you know, hovering over them and making all the selections for them. And we know, and we kind of talk in these terms at Common Sense, 0 to 8, you are a little bit more in the driver's seat. You do have an opportunity to make some of the selections for your kids. 8 and up, it becomes damage control. You are really, the parents are the last to know, and they are the ones that are, their kids are asking for something, or they're already watching something, and the parent is kind of scrambling and looking at Common Sense or talking to their friends and finding out what that app really actually is and what it's all about. So this is, I love the 0 to 8 space because I feel like it's an opportunity to really, again, start raising this generation of kids that are critical consumers.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, this is, it's fun. Well, as a parent, I do actually find it fun to find things that I think like my kids are going to like. And you're right, we are at a unique moment where like we have some control that we can kind of steer them to the things that we think are going to be good and maybe more educational or higher quality than some of the stuff they might be exposed to on their own.
Yeah. And I think for 0 to 8, I mean, at least in my experience, and I think it's fair to say, I think a lot of people think that there's so much content now, which there is. There is just like an overabundance of TV alone, right? Or even apps. But kids are really winning in this game because there's so much quality content out there for kids. So there, it does take a little bit of digging, but it's very common to find programs, movies, apps, websites, obviously books, that are really infused with learning opportunities for each kid. So it's just a matter of finding that quality, again, matching that with their interests and likes, keeping them engaged, and kind of training them and being hands-on as a parent. So one thing that we talk a lot about, or we get asked, probably the most common question that we get asked, I would say, it's fair to say, is about screen limits. Everybody wants to know, thanks Fitbit for being, you know, 10,000 steps, and everybody wants a number associated with everything. Everybody asks us how much screen time is okay for their kids. Is that the right question to be asking? Should we be focused on that?
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing work in children and media for over 15 years, and that question has not changed. How much, give me an hour, how many hours, how many minutes should my kid be using media? And I mean, the truth of the matter is the term screen time itself is in some ways not that useful because it captures so many things, because watching TV is not the same thing as playing games, which is not the same thing as video chatting, and the possible quality or cruddiness of what you're doing can vary quite a bit. So, you know, when parents are asking this question to me, I generally try to steer them away from thinking about this in terms of time and thinking about some of the other qualities of that experience, right? That it's not just screen time. It's also, like I said, it's what's your child ready for? What are you showing them? And how are you using it with that child? Things that we think have as much or more impact on the effects of that media than just 1 hour or 2 hours.
You're listening to Common Sense Census, media use by children ages 0 to 8, presented by Common Sense Media's Michael Robb and Jill Murphy on Bina, a series featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
But there are new guidelines from the AAP that we should probably acknowledge, because we do support the AAP's guidelines. Which are?
So the American Academy of Pediatrics. How many people are familiar with the American Academy of Pediatrics? And how many people know their guidelines on screen media use and can recite them by heart? Yes. Okay. So they just revised them last year. They are continually updating them as new research comes out and they find out a little bit more about what the effects of media are. As they stand at now, for kids under the age of 18 months, they generally suggest that you avoid the use of screen media other than things like for video chatting, which is something that I definitely did when my kids were very young and I would be traveling on the road, you know, with Skype with our kids. For kids who are between the ages of 18 to 24 months, they really just strongly recommend choosing high-quality stuff that you can watch, that you can find with your kids, and to watch with them. That is where they put the emphasis, is that it's something that you should do with your kids. And then for kids who are a little bit older, kids between the ages of 2 to 5, they suggest limiting it to 1 hour per day of specifically high-quality programs. But again, so those are recommendations, they're guidelines. Not everybody falls into those specific time limits. It's more nuanced than that. And I don't know how it is in your home. I mean, have you?
Well, I also always, every time, again, I meet people and they hear that I work at Common Sense, they immediately feel ashamed of themselves, like they're doing something wrong. And I'm the first one to, no one can adhere to every possible recommendation out there. And I certainly don't. But, which might be a bad thing to say with my boss sitting right here. But I do think that when it comes to even our age ratings, they are more of a recommendation. You know, my daughter, my older daughter, she's 7. She really loves to be scared. It doesn't affect her the same way that it affects my younger daughter. So I might age down some of the movies and TV shows that she's interested in if they are a little scarier. So all of these things are really set up to be a guideline and really and a recommendation. But the part that parents have to take on is, you know your kid, you know what's best for them, you have your own values, your own framework of how you want to raise your kid, you know what affects them, you know what's going to keep them up at night, and you want to avoid that at all costs, or what's really going to get them excited about reading. So this is all an opportunity. This is all information that we're providing to you and that the AAP is providing to you to really adopt and get into your everyday life.
And just one other thing to note about AAP recommendations and most media recommendations, it's not that the research is saying that if your kids have such and such exposure, they have 2 hours a day, that you're really harming your kids. That they're saying that it's that screens are harming your kids. It's not that the screens are bad. It's that we know that the social and cognitive and physical activities that they do are good for kids, and they don't want screens to displace those things. So if you kind of edge into it backwards, like what are the things that we know are good for kids, and you're doing those things, then you're in a much better spot and you don't have to worry about counting every single screen minute.
Right. So what are some research-backed, practical tips and advice that you would, what's your go-to advice for parents when it comes to managing media?
Well, so when we asked about this in the survey, I definitely recommend turning off the TV if nobody's watching. You know, there are a lot of homes where sports is on all the time or news is on all the time.
And we've been watching through my house. that's what's going on at my house. Sports are on all the time. Thanks, Warriors.
I'm not saying there aren't some times when it's appropriate.
But. Okay.
What we know, especially for very young children, is that having TV on in the background can disrupt the interactions between parents and kids. Mm-hmm. So basically what you end up with are poor quality interactions. And those are things that we know are really important for kids' healthy development. It also can harm the quality of kids' play. So if you have like something on in the background all the time and kids are playing with something on the floor and they're kind of just, you know, they might notice something out of the corner of their eye on the screen and like look up and they kind of lose track and they have to kind of refocus when they get back in. So you end up with poor quality play. So like that's just one like really easy for some families thing that I recommend just kind of off the bat, just turn off the TV if nobody is watching. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk a lot about the importance of sleep. So again, when I say that the recommendations are not based on that screens are bad, but based on what we know is good for kids, we know sleep is very good for kids. So the reason they say no screens an hour before bed is because when kids are using TV or video games or something before bed, it tends to actually edge the bedtime later. Mm-hmm. And so kids end up going to bed later and they don't get as much sleep. Some people think that the particular kinds of light that come out of, especially mobile devices, can kind of mess up with your biorhythms and harm the quantity and quality of your sleep. And like I said, we know that sleep is really important for kids' development. So that's another research-backed tip that, you know, you want to try to avoid too much screen time before bed.
Okay. How about anything about reading?
Read with your kids.
Because we want positive tips, too.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Read with your kids. And I would say that in terms of media, to treat media more like a book. So like we know reading is great because it's a great language-rich opportunity to talk to your kid and get close to them and to snuggle. And it's great. I mean, most people love reading with their kids. Media can be pretty similar. Like I can put my kid in my lap and we can play on the iPad together. It's actually one of the nice parts about having mobile media. It's actually a lot easier in some ways to have shared focus on something. And what we know from the research is that you're much more likely to have positive learning and, you know, really supportive bonding when parents are using media with their kids. I know it's not always possible for parents to use media with their kids, but you know, even if you can't like sit and be with them, then, you know, during your device-free dinner, just ask them what they were doing and what they were watching.
Kids love to talk about media, their favorite movie, book, app. I mean, you might not want to hear it, but it is a great way to get them to chat. And I agree, there's great learning experiences and just engaging with your kids. And I love that example of using all media like a book because it's true. And we do, and again, I know you're all super familiar with all of our reviews, but we do have a section within all of our reviews that is called Families Can Talk About, and it does exactly that. So it's those we talk so much about co-viewing and how important that is. It's also not always that realistic. I need to make dinner and I'm going to sit my kid in front of a show so they can watch that while I'm doing something else. But it also creates an opportunity, which I like to call faux viewing, so I can kind of insert myself back into what they were just doing and kind of ask them questions about the show they were watching and annoy them a little bit about it. But then they just get very chatty and they really love to share their experience on a game or whatever they've been reading. So that level of engagement is so important.
I think you have to be careful not to shame kids over the fact that they like media.
Yes.
I mean, like, we like what we like.
Or parents.
Yeah, parents like media, too. And I don't want my kids shaming me about the fact that I enjoy watching TV at night.
Yeah. Right before bed.
But it's like an opportunity, right? Like, we should take advantage of the things that our kids like. And if that's an opportunity to, like, talk with your kid and get closer to them, you should take advantage of that opportunity.
Agree. So I feel like there are two things plaguing parents, especially in the 0 to 8 range, which are binge watching on Netflix and YouTube. And again, while screen time used to be the number one question, now it's all about how do I handle YouTube And what am I going to do about Netflix? Uh-huh. Sorry if there's anyone that works for either one of those companies in this room. We love you. We hate you. So what do we? What are some good ways for parents? I think one of the biggest challenges with those is kind of the transition, because it's that binging. It is one after the other. And what do you think some great tips are for parents about kind of taming that meltdown?
Transitions are really hard. And there's not a perfect solution. It's not like anyone's ever cracked the code of like the exact perfect way to, you know, get 100% crying-free transitions away from media.
Step one, know your kid's mood.
Know your kid's mood. So a couple of things. One, I would say that you try to find a natural breaking point before you transition. And sometimes, you know, especially for young kids, like there's two stories in any one episode of something. Mm-hmm. That happens very frequently. There's like an 11-minute segment. There's another 11-minute segment. If you can time it so that you're in the middle of one of those segments when you need to go, it's a lot easier to get buy-in from your kid rather than like stopping it in the middle of like an exciting part of what's happening. Or if like a kid is playing a game, like when they finish a particular level or a save point or something like that. So helping them get to a reasonable end from their perspective will help the transition. I also find that what works really well in my house is letting kids turn off the devices themselves. If I try to get it and turn it off, that is a trigger. Mm-hmm. But if I say like, am I going to turn it off or are you going to turn it off? They don't want me to turn it off. Like they want to have the opportunity to press the button.
Yes.
And when they do, like, you know, it's like magic. It's like, they have some buy-in. Like, I am the one who has turned off the device. And now we may proceed to the next thing that we are going to do. So I found that to be pretty successful. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think the control thing is huge. Yeah. I think I've had to give over control, especially to my younger daughter. I'll also say that I think there are actual parental controls within both of those platforms that I mentioned. They're not as easy to find as I'd like them to be, but they're there. So you can stop the frequency of the next video playing on Netflix. And then there are parental controls within YouTube that are pretty simple once you find them, and we can actually send out a link after this to that you can set that also just help you kind of get a little bit of a handle. I think the challenge for most parents is the related content that can come up. So if you create a specific account and you subscribe to a few channels that you like, then you have a little bit more control over the content that they're going to be watching. And there is, I mean, some really good stuff on there. Really great. I mean, the preschool stuff and Netflix originals, Amazon Prime originals. There are so many awesome Hulu originals. There's so much good stuff out there right now. So,
are you going to be sharing your kids' favorites?
Yeah, I can share my kids' favorites. Maybe later.
If people want to know, we can let you know.
Yeah, if anyone's
interested. What are our kids' favorites?
I've got a laundry list.
Something else that also works in our house and is the use of timers, like a visual timer. We have like an actual like hourglass thing, but that's another one where like I didn't tell you to turn it off the hourglass.
Right.
I told you to turn off. And for some reason, it kind of diffuses it.
Yeah, because I think, you know, again, some of these programs have the timer built in. I mean, by age six, they can turn it off themselves. So it works up to a certain age, and then you need to introduce something else. But luckily, younger kids love rules. In most cases, establishing some boundaries really works. They're very responsive. So we talk a lot about role modeling.
Yeah.
All the time, and then I feel really bad about myself. But what do you think that it is really important for parents to do in an effort to like show their kids how they want to be?
Well, first off, you should stop making yourself feel bad.
It's okay. That's my job.
Yeah. Parents like to put a lot of guilt on themselves. I don't know if anyone else has noticed.
Last week we did a talk, and I started off by saying, we're not here to shame you. And somebody came up to me at the end and was like, when you said that, I automatically felt guilty. But we're not. We're just here to provide information.
Yeah, we're predisposed to like shaming ourselves. Even
and I'll
though,
take all the guilt.
Even though using media can be part of like a very healthy, balanced, you know, lifestyle.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, don't feel guilty that your kids are using some media. Like that's not.
I'm not. I'm raising two couch potatoes. I'm telling you.
Okay. So in terms of role modeling. So again, in terms of what we know about kids and kids' development. It's really hard to get your kids to behave in the way that you want them to if you yourself are not behaving in that way. So if you are using devices at the table, like during mealtimes, you are more likely to struggle with kids using devices at the table. I try not to multitask. Like, for example, like I try not to be on my phone while I'm watching TV. I try to focus on one thing or the other because what we know from the research on multitasking is that it prevents you from doing any one thing and particularly well, or from paying attention or being able to remember things as well when you're multitasking. What are you doing in your home?
Lately, I think my younger daughter, I've noticed more of an influence on her. I think when my older daughter was born, so again, she's almost eight, I didn't even have an iPhone. And I've just noticed such a significant difference between the two of them. So just 3 years later, and you know, when my younger one was a baby, I had an iPhone and it was multitasking and the whole thing. So I find myself falling on narration, so kind of telling them what I'm doing if I'm on the phone, because it's not just a phone, because it's an actual computer, and I'm either reading the news or I'm, you know, on a birthday party invitation for them, or looking at photos of their cousins and want to show them something. And so giving them a little more insight into what I'm actually doing behind that screen has really helped, especially, again, my younger one, so she gets a sense of that it's not just a toy. And that it's not, again, just a phone. So a little more explanation.
No, and that totally resonates. And because, you know, in years gone by, I remember my mom, like, sitting out with, like, the planner and, like, writing stuff. And, like, I probably wasn't bothering her. But I didn't think she was just, like, goofing off. And the iPhone is like a little black box. You don't necessarily know what's happening there. So that's a really smart idea.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I mean, of course, we're a common sense family. So now I've got my older daughter saying what is and isn't appropriate for her younger sister, which is better than an app. I mean, it's the greatest. She's just like, that's not appropriate for you. But she's not necessarily doing that for herself. So we're working on that. But so, yeah, we'll often check ratings and the reviews, and now I kind of walk them through what it is. So instead of before just saying, well, it says, you know, 4, and so it's not appropriate for you, now we'll kind of walk through some of the areas. Well, it's got a little bit of kissing, or it's got a little, it's too scary, or give them a little bit more context as to why they are or are not watching something. So that's also helped. So more explanation, which I think goes back to your idea of a little bit more control. It gives them more context into what's going on instead of just, you know, being really specific and stringent. Does anybody have any questions?
Yeah, I feel like we've talked long enough. You guys are all parents.
Who wants to hear more about my daughters?
Yeah.
So I know you said maybe the question shouldn't be how much screen time do they have. I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, both boys, and my in-laws asked if they could get my 3-year-old a tablet, and my first reaction was absolutely not over my dead body. So, I mean, maybe not I would love to hear your thoughts on, like, when do you ever introduce a tablet, how you introduce a tablet, like, how do you even go there?
So the way I've treated that, and by the way, I've had a very similar conversation and reaction, I think that the way that I view that is I would view it as a TV, so I wouldn't be buying my 3-year-old her own television, so I kind of treated it the same way. So we introduced the tablet as like a family tablet, where it was something that was more community-based. It was kind of in the family room. We could all use it. We had to share it. Instead of giving into that, like, this is your device. Introducing that at a young age, I wouldn't say it's right or wrong. It's just, it creates a headache. It's going to create so many difficult issues for you. And I think I so relate to that question and have many more examples. But I think the onus will be on you and your, you know, partner to figure out the management of that. And so I think prolonging that isn't the worst thing.
This is Bina, KALW series featuring artists and thinkers who've spoken at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Today's program is Common Sense Census, Media Use by Children Ages 0 to 8, presented by Common Sense Media's Michael Robb and Jill Murphy. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
So I work with an organization called No Bully, and we are very concerned about cyberbullying.
Yeah.
Been a new campaign we've launched. I know some of your folks are involved. And one of the things that we're thinking about is 0 to 8 year olds, because they're not only, and I wonder what research or what your thoughts are, you're not only exposing them to content, you're exposing them when they go online to the internet or the digital world in which there's good people and bad people and all kinds of things. So how do we sort of think about that? That we're not just helping manage the content they're seeing, but we're creating their digital citizenry, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for kids younger than 8, I think you do have to be pretty aware of what kinds of online interactions they are involved in, or what kinds of content do you even have that would allow them to have interactions potentially with strangers. Depending on what kind of product you're using, obviously there are some things that either there will be a curated friend list that you may have some control over, or if it's like something like Minecraft, you might be in a big, wide open world where you don't know exactly who you're talking to. And you want to make sure that you can set controls on whether that's available to your child or not. And even at a young age, it's not too early to start having those conversations that if you hear something that makes you like really uncomfortable, or you know that you're not supposed to hear it, to come and tell a parent. I happen to believe that it's impossible to protect your kids from all of the bad stuff that's going to happen. So you need to build like the skill set of resiliency and like what to do when you encounter these things. So it's tricky, but you also, there are programs too that will restrict the kinds of interactions that kids have online. They have like pre-scripted interactions. So you might look for games where like kids are limited to being able to say, good job, mm-hmm. or, interesting, or like, right. better luck next time. And allow some level of communication without getting to the full range of potentially really profane or mean or like other stuff that they might be exposed to. Have you had experiences with this yet?
No, I think there's games that are that exactly what you had just said. There's games that kind of are like social media training wheels.
Yeah.
And so they kind of start that. Now, that can take you down one road or it can take you down another, but I think it gives kids a sense of like how to behave online. And I would just say this is an area where I think real world parenting advice applies to online as well. You wouldn't want your kid talking to strangers. You don't want them talking to strangers on tests online. So I think there are they're really compatible, the traditional parenting advice, and you can apply it to kids. I just think at that age, for the younger set, going online is really challenging. The only example that I do have is, again, my daughter, reading, actually on Common Sense, a review that another user wrote about a movie that she loved. And she's like, what? And they hated it. And she's like, why would they say that? That was like the first experience that she ever had seeing some negative reaction to something. Now, of course, it was a much softer space, but it was so... It was really interesting, and she was all about, like, why would you bash it? I just want to say, like, how much I love it. And so it was just really interesting, especially in a space now. I think this generation of kids are all about learning soft skills in school, and they're all about teaching empathy and resilience, and so kind of encouraging kids also not to just talk like that to their siblings or their friends, but communicating that way online I think is also really important.
Thanks so much for being here. I was wondering if you guys have recommended online kind of curated repositories of kind of online things for children of this age. And so I'm thinking, like you were mentioning, it's not always possible to just sit there and watch the content with your child. So I've heard of, like, when YouTube Kids came on, I was like, oh, that's great. But it just means they're not watching porn, but they're still, it's not like positive necessarily content. And so I've heard of a few, like the one that I know about is Right Now Media, which is a Christian one that they've actually curated and tried to make it very positive. But are there any others that exist that you guys would recommend?
Yes, we have so many lists of recommendations of different resources online that you can go to, and lots of best of lists. But there are a number of kind of pre-curated places similar to YouTube Kids, but maybe with a little bit more of a walled garden experience that you can check out for sure. And then again, I think just even on YouTube, subscribing to channels that you're really interested in, and we do also have recommendations on what those channels might be. So there's, I don't know how old your kids are.
3 and 4.
Okay, so the preschool set on YouTube, there's so much content on there that's original content, all really good, not all, but a lot of good stuff. And so if you just through your email subscribe to your own channel or develop your own channel, and you can subscribe to their sub-channels, and so you'll only see those. So it's almost like having your own network with its own television shows within there. So that's one way to kind of develop your own, especially if they are already inclined to thinking about YouTube. It might be an easier sell for them.
Hi. So I know you mentioned earlier about not really getting into screen time limit because it can vary, but I would love to hear your perspective, or if you have any research on of the screens that you are consuming with your children, whether it's TV or whether it's on your mobile device, an interactive app, if there's any guidelines on what's an appropriate amount of those, like the breakdown of it, so of whatever you're doing. So, you know, I think when I always think of screen time TV, it's like passive watching, and to your point about if they get distracted because it's on in the background. But what I'm trying to figure out is like what's an appropriate amount of things where I'm actually teaching her, you know, something, or she's, you know, learning something where it's interactive and it is a little bit more cognitive in the sense of like she's actually got to read or she's got to play something. But is too much of that too much? And what is that balance? And I'm trying to figure out if you've got any research or anything that breaks into more of the interactivity versus more of the passive watching, which is what I think a lot of us associate like screen time with.
That's a good question. The first thing is, I would say, there's no hard and fast number. There's no research anywhere that says, like, this is the exact number of hours that is optimal for kids. We can make educated guesses, mostly having to do with what's too much and, you know, things that are related to, like, if you encounter so much media that you are inadvertently exposed to lots of, like, advertising, that it can have negative effects in terms of increased, like, obesity or preferences for like sugary stuff. That's where like you see a lot of like the screen time research coming out of. But in terms of like good stuff, first of all, I commend you for like finding for looking for like the best stuff for your kid. If you're doing it with them, that's going to be a really positive experience. If you're already doing the other things that we know are good for kids, you're already reading with them, you're already they're already having opportunities to interact in the real world, they're already social with friends, they're getting enough sleep, they're eating well enough. I have picky eaters, but eating well enough. Then I don't think you necessarily have to know exactly how many, if it's half an hour one day or an hour and a half the next day, or even like on a rainy day, 2.5 hours, you know, or 3 hours on some days. I wouldn't sweat it, because you already know that you're kind of crossing your T's and dotting your I's on the stuff that is already good for kids. And when you are having that media time, you can feel better about it because you're doing it in a way that we know by research is good for kids, that how you are using it with them is more important than how much. The fact that you are sitting with them and talking with them and trying to engage with it is, it's kind of like the nutritional screen time. So do you have anything to add to that?
No.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on if your kid is hooked on something that you were saying before is not quality, is clearly they're getting nothing from it without giving that shame that you were also talking about.
Oh, another very relatable question. I think the way that both in our, you know, overall common sense media advice and just personally which I have used, it's kind of that introduction. So there's something within whatever they're addicted to that you can kind of tap into, whether it's the platform, if it's on Netflix, let's try a different Netflix show. If it's a science show or a superhero show, maybe there's another superhero show. So there's different ways that you can kind of tap into what they're binging or addicted to and kind of pull from and see if you can kind of introduce something else. It won't work every time, and it won't work the first time for sure, but there are ways to kind of transition kids out. I do think that, and I don't even know if there's actual research on this, but I do know that kids do get really attached to certain characters. And so, again, how old is your child?
4.5.
Yeah, so the attachment, I think, to certain characters isn't necessarily a bad thing, and it's quite natural, but I think just kind of that inserting a little introduction into other areas, or turning their attention completely, if that's a show that you're dealing with, turning their attention to maybe an app or just a game, you know, something to kind of steer their attention into another direction. is really valuable.
And I don't know if there's a difference. I'm not exactly sure what your child is watching. There's a difference between content that is actively kind of bad for your kid, that's got like a lot of violence or like sexual content or a lot of commercialism or something like that, versus stuff that's kind of innocuous but annoying. But there are shows that my kids like that I don't love. But if it's not harming them and they really enjoy it, I can kind of let it slide. But it's kind of like you said, distract, distract, distract. They have pretty short attention spans, and it's not hard to get them onto another TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be surprised. Some of these things flame out pretty quick. They'll be really into something for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever it is.
Or a month.
And then they're
longer,
on the next
but
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They move on pretty
quickly. Is that helpful?
Is it a TV show? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Is it Paw Patrol?
Did you want to share what the TV show is? You don't have to.
It may just be I don't like it, but it's Clifford. And then the other example I'm thinking of is he'll often watch on YouTube just like trucks, like just cartoon trucks driving across the screen. They're not doing anything.
I think it's it used to be Sprout and now it's Universal Kids. And they just came out with a show that is that. It's just
trucks?
Video of trucks. I think it's called Trucks. And it's just like live action video footage. Some of it is just a phase.
Clipper's not that bad. It could be so much worse.
Yeah, I was really tiptoeing around that. I didn't know what was going on there. But Clifford, yeah.
Thank you for tonight. We're avid users of your app, and this will be very handy to like help diffuse a lot of battles about Saturday night, movie night, and that sort of thing. My question's around gaming. What are the specific findings and guidelines around gaming? If you could just kind of double-click into that. There's a group of parents that seem to support this notion of, like, it develops hand-eye coordination.
That's what I said when I was 8 years old and I went into Nintendo.
I use the same tactics. Yeah. And now, as like, you know, wearing the parenting hat, we have this sort of shame reflex. It's like, no, like, you know, just go play real tennis. You don't need, you know, Nintendo tennis or whatever it is. But I'd love to just hear from you what the experts and pundits are saying specifically around gaming time. And if you might be able to answer it, like, by age group, that'd be great. Thanks.
Me? You? Okay. Gaming, it's like TV. You want to find something that is well matched for a kid of a particular age. And, you know, if they're 2 or 3 years old, they're going to have limited dexterity to be able to control what's happening on the screen. So you're going to be looking for apps that are pretty forgiving in terms of gross motor movements. Touchscreens have been really good because they've really lowered the age at which children can interact. The finger is the locus of control for a young child, as opposed to having a controller where what I do with my thumb on this controller is related to something I'm looking at over here on a screen. It's just it really brought the age down. As kids get older, obviously, they're able to do more, and so it's a matter of finding what is it that will kind of stimulate them cognitively. Like my kid, 5 years old, likes this game called Think Rolls. It's a little simple game. It's nonviolent. It's like a puzzle-solving game where you try to get this little round blob around a board while avoiding obstacles, and it's kind of like a puzzle-solving game. So there's nothing inherently wrong with gaming. You're going to be looking for something that's probably nonviolent, that doesn't have questionable content, might not have a lot of like consumerism like kind of built into it. Doesn't have lots of stuff where your kids are getting tricked into like having to buy in-app purchases, and find something that like they like and maybe that you even like, so that you'll want to play with them or can be really interested in it. And like Jill mentioned earlier, at this age we're kind of lucky because there's a lot of good high quality educational stuff. I mean, there's high quality stuff, there's educational stuff. Those two things are not always the same. You're really looking for those things that can check both those boxes, and the more that you can find those particular kinds of games for kids at a particular age. I don't know if there's a specific age group you're interested in, but you know, that's you're gonna be happier and your kid's gonna be happier. I mean, if it's like high quality content, because I wouldn't treat 1 hour of like a high quality like PBS nurturing, cognitively stimulating game the same as I would like a Candy Crush game. So like I might be inclined to like, if my kids are like really into it, let them go a little bit longer. you can make that judgment call as a parent. If you think that it's something that's worthwhile, if you think it's something that's junk, you might try to move them off a little bit earlier. There is no hard and set like number, and everybody wants a number. It's so hard. But it's kind of what works for your family, too. I mean, if you have other things you need to do and you need to set a limit, then by all means, set the limit. I'm not against parents setting time limits. I'm just saying there's not one size fits all for all families.
And if it's a game that's high quality and they're playing the same game every day and it's 2 hours and they only have 2 hours of screen time, if it's high quality and that's how they choose to spend it and you're okay with that, then that's fine. But I think that whether it's mobile or console game or whatever it might be, unfortunately, because I wish there was that hard and fast rule, it really does come down to balance. So as long as you feel like they're doing that as well as all the other things that you want them to be doing that create this healthy diet in their life, then it's fine. But I do think, especially, well, with all media, but with games and as you get into console games, and I know that it's a quick leap from puzzle games to first-person shooters. Be happy with your tennis game. That, again, it just comes down to quality of content.
The lady over there made me think of this. My kids love watching videos of themselves. And so I'm wondering if there's any correlation between, you know, how much of they're watching of themselves and their videos and the pictures of themselves and, like, rising narcissism?
That's a really interesting question. I don't know the answer. I don't know if anybody knows the answer to that particular question. There's some controversy whether what narcissism levels are actually rising. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But you're right. Like, all kids like to watch. I mean, I like to watch, like, videos of me involved in things. So it's not just kids.
Noted, Mike. And
I was a part of that thing.
That's a separate after-hours discussion. But I do. I mean, kids love to hear stories about themselves too. Yeah. So I think this is not new, and we have given them yet another tool for them to reflect on their childhood when they're four, and they're like, "Tell me about when I was three." And so, I mean, kids love to look at photos of themselves, love to look at videos of themselves. Again, I mean, I always fall on this, but it's another one of those balancing acts. I mean, if they're going to sit there and just drool over what they looked like and how they acted back then and want to recreate over and over again, I mean, you probably want to divert their attention to trying something else or put them in an acting class.
Well, thank you so much. We're so happy to have had you. This was great. We will be having a reception in the atrium just after the talk. You're all welcome to ask more questions. So thank you.
Bina is a co-production of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco and KALW. For more information about programs at the JCCSF, you can visit jccsf.org. Today's program was Common Sense Census, Media Use by Children Ages 0 to 8, presented by Common Sense Media's Michael Robb and Jill Murphy. The recording engineers at the JCCSF are Ben Bernardi, Alex Espalet, Dan Folds, Carly Mari, and Aiden Nelson. David Kwan edits and produces the program, and Tina Pimentuan is the executive producer. Our theme music is from the album Masada Rock by the Rashanim Trio, and the music you're hearing right now is by John Zorn. Bina is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. I'm Jordan Abel. Thanks for listening.